Welcome back to Maritime Morning. I want to take some time this morning to talk about Margaret Thatcher. Baroness Thatcher died at age 87 yesterday. Clearly a political phenomenon. The first woman elected to lead a major Western power, the longest-serving British prime minister for 150 years, I think arguably the most dominant, and one could also argue the most divisive force in British politics in the second half of the 20th century. She stood high on the global stage. She was a star in the United States. She was a heroine in the former Soviet republics of Central Europe. And obviously a point of reference for politicians in France, in Germany, in Italy, in Spain. The Thatcher years were remarkable years, to say the least, in Britain. And after a period of time where the UK was in decline, the deregulation of markets and the privatization of the state's assets showed that individual prosperity could resume in the UK. Thatcher didn't cause the changes in the state, but she certainly was someone who embodied them. And her belief in a moral authority of the individual and the necessity of freedom of choice was one that echoed around the world. Joining us to talk about this is Vince Gelasso. He's with the Economic Institute of Montreal, and he joins us this morning on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Gelasso.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What was your immediate response or your immediate thought upon hearing the death of Margaret Thatcher?
Sadness. I lived a few years in the UK, and I'm still living there part time as an economist, and she really left a mark on the country. And regardless of where you stand on the political spectrum, she literally changed British politics, I think for the best, in my opinion. But she it's a sad day for England, and that was a sad moment to hear about her death.
It was interesting to see the responses from different corners following the announcement of her death. There are obviously people like you and I. I was an admirer of Thatcher. I was an admirer of Thatcher's economic policies and her political acumen. But there are others less so. An extremely polarizing figure. In terms of economics and the way that she handled economics, why did she become so polarizing?
The thing is, we have to remember, to answer that question correctly, we have to remember where England stood in the 1970s when she came to office.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remember, we were talking about the British Empire, which was at that time collapsing. The British economy was slowing down. It was actually losing ground to France, Germany, and other Western European countries. It was the cradle of the Industrial Revolution, and now it had become the basket case of Europe. It had names like the Sick Man of Europe or the British Disease. So yeah, British politicians were even talking about managing the decline of England. And the fact of the matter is, British people were very pessimistic at that time. And she thought everything was great in England. She thought she ought to put back the great in Great Britain. So she said, I'll do the reforms which are hard to do and need to be done. So she moved on with a plan for privatizing crown corporations that were benefiting from gigantic subsidies to make them profitable. And she was also favorable to removing controls on the economy and opening up to international trade.
Mm-hmm. At the time, she was vilified in other corners, though, especially regarding her, for one example, her policies on Ireland. Perhaps you can explain a little bit about why she decided to take the stands that she did in the relationship between Britain and Ireland.
With that regard, I think it's a completely other different issue than with regard to economics.
Yeah.
But I think her strong stance came from, let's remember, her main backer was in the 1970s when she ran for the leadership was Airey Neave, who was a decorated British officer and a conservative MP. He was murdered in the House of Parliament. I'm not kidding. In the parking lot of the House of Parliament, his car was blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later at the Brighton Conference, they put a bomb in the wrong room, which nearly killed some of her friends, killed a lot of conservative party members. So she had a strong stance against the terrorist part of the Irish faction, but that was probably why she was like that. But more to economics, I think she had a strong conviction that this is where I think we should remember her the most, is she thought that England could be great again, and she brought it back with leaving the economy free, by privatizing, by opening up to international trade, and by giving back to workers the right to work and not being forced to join a union when they want a job.
Hmm. She was fiercely anti-labor and changed the philosophy of the country through that period of time. What has been her economic legacy, if you will, when we look at what happened in the latter part of the 1980s and into the 90s, and how did it shape Britain's economy?
Okay, the good part, there's a good part and there's a less good part. The good part is privatization. Let's remember, when we think in Canada of Crown corporations, we have Canada Post, we have electricity and sometimes alcohol production and lotteries. In the United Kingdom at that time, steel was nationalized, auto production was nationalized. If you wanted to take a bus between, let's say, two cities within the country, that was a Crown corporation as well. Everything was nationalized. It was basically every sector of the economy was under a lot of government control. And she saw that these corporations, these Crown corporations, were on top of that unproductive and inefficient, and were propped up by massive subsidies from taxpayers. And she says, we will open them up to competition. We will open them up to efficiency based on ownership. And she literally began a privatization plan, which returned the British economy to the British people by exactly that, by selling them shares. And it was very nicely done in that sense. British people in the beginning of the 70s had an idea of stockholders as people wearing penguin suits, and she democratized stock options so that at the end of her reign, 35% of Britons had stocks and had massive amount of stocks. They were investing in stocks because they understood that she connected ownership of corporation with the productivity of the corporation, with profitability, and people were invested in that, while when she came to office, it had been below 7%.
Mm. In doing so, she actually moved labor to the right. Would you agree with that?
Very much with that. Actually, and that brings us to the least good part of her reign. She did not reduce the deficit as much as we think. We portray her as a big cutter, but that part she was not. She did not balance the books. She did not manage to reduce the deficit, and to a certain extent, the size of the government, although it declined slightly with regards to spending, it did not decline as much as the first few years of the Labour government. She pushed the Labour so much to the right that they actually, when economic growth started taking off in the 1990s, in the end of the 1990s, they actually slowed down on spending, and they increased it at the end of their reign with the crisis, but they actually controlled government spending more than Thatcher did to a certain extent. So she made every party more to the right and more acceptable of market forces, of having a limited government, or a government that actually targets its missions very, very, very carefully and intervenes a little less than the pre-1979 consensus.